Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are,
and that's who we care about.
Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Today in The Grave Talks, intense paranormal experiences. A conversation with Josh Morris. A crunch of footsteps in the snow on a cold Michigan winter night. Strange inaudible voices that were clearly present but could not be made out. And a ghostly woman floating in to tuck children at their beds night after night. These are some of the experiences that spark the interest of Josh Morris into the paranormal. Just where did the adventure into the paranormal take him? That's what we talk about today on The Grave Talks.
I can tell you exactly when, and it was when I was a very young child. And really the biggest thing, like we had a cabin growing up, like a hunting cabin. And it was up in about, if you hold your hand up, I'm from Michigan. So originally, so if you hold your right hand up, palm up to your face, you can kind of point toward the middle of your palm. That's about where our cabin was.
Okay.
It was out in the middle of nowhere. It was 80 acres and we had hardly any neighbors. It was on a dirt road. But we used it for hunting. This, like I said, years ago, my grandfather used it for hunting, and I would just go as a kid and hang out. And in any case, the night times were just deathly quiet, and we would sleep in this cabin, and I'd be in my little bed, and my grandparents would be off in another bed, and you would just hear people walking around in the snow. You'd hear the crunch of the footsteps outside the windows. You would hear people talking, but you couldn't make out what they were saying. And it wasn't real scary for me. The cool thing is my grandparents sort of downplayed, they downplayed it. They didn't make it scary. They just were like, you know, they talked about the ghosts. And they did explain it to me, but they didn't really give me exact details. But they just, in a general way that most, you know, grandparents explain to kids, but they would talk about it as if it was just sort of a normal thing.
Mm-hmm. Just totally accepted as that's what it was. Now, was there any memories of you know, going outside the next day? And of course, you're talking about snow in Michigan. So, I mean, you go out and you take a look around and you see prints or something. Was there ever any evidence or anything to show what was causing those sounds?
Never. There was never any footprints. My grandfather, my grandma would always make my grandfather get up at the crack of dawn and she'd always make him go check.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you could hear for miles. So it's not like somebody would drive a vehicle up, and especially in the snow on a dirt road. And then you have to kind of pull back to the farmhouse. It's just, there's no way you could sneak up on this house.
Yeah.
But he check for footprints, and there would never be any footprints. And even when I went out to play, the only footprints I'd see usually was from the farmhouse to the outhouse from my grandfather. We'd never find anything like that. It just became a regular sort of occurrence that would happen. And we'd only go up there like once or twice a year, you know, but it seemed to happen quite often. So that's what really started that fascination with ghosts.
And there's a distinct sound difference for anybody who's not from the northern areas that don't know about snow. I grew up in Wisconsin, and I lived in Michigan too for a while over in the Traverse City area, so I'm familiar. You know, there's a distinct sound of that crunching snow and the sound of a human being walking through it versus, you know, just an animal or deer or something like that. And you're going to see tracks, no matter what it was, that if it right. was animals or deer, I mean, especially distinctly something like deer, you'd see the prints. And when you don't see anything, but you know you heard those things, that's an interesting concept. And let's just touch on that for 1 second, because it's kind of like, you know, the tree falls in the forest, you know, doesn't make any noise. If there's no prints and there's nothing that's to be seen, what is making that noise? Is it something that's residual, that's just kind of emanating some sort of sound without actually, you know, there's not the friction between two objects, the snow and a boot, that's causing it, but something else is causing this? That's one of those things that I always wonder about when it comes to mysterious sounds that seemingly you would think could be explained. All the materials are there to make those sounds, but there's no evidence of them ever being used.
Oh, absolutely. And a ghost tend, what I've noticed over the years is ghosts tend to communicate in different ways depending on the type of hauntings. And I tend to categorize four main types, one being the intelligent haunting, where spirits can actually interact and there's sort of an intelligent communication that can happen. There's a residual that you just talked about, where events tend to replay almost like a tape recorder over and over, and maybe are triggered by certain things in the environment, which I think I'll come back to that for sure.
Yeah.
And then poltergeist, which is objects that can move and there's a manifestation from some of the psychokinetic energy we emit. And then, of course, the fourth thing being a demonic episode, which we don't like. That's the worst. But coming back to the residual that we talked about, I think that, yes, there are certain things that replay and are captured in the energies around. And, you know, the earth is full of energies and there's different rocks and minerals that can, you know, help that situation. And I think they're triggered. I think they're triggered by certain things and probably us going up there or bringing our natural energies and things like that could trigger those things.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. What did you know about the, obviously we're talking that your family, your grandparents, they were just cool with it. Like, yeah, it's a ghost. It is what it is. Have some bacon. What did you know about the property? What did they know about the history of the property?
You know, ironically, I never got a chance to really go back and look at the history. It's once we eventually sold the farm, mm-hmm. As a teenager, I really kind of shifted my interest. And I really, you know, as a teenager, you're not really worried so much about history and, you know, you're not quite that in-depth investigator, at least back then, because, you know, back when I was a teenager, we didn't have, it wasn't cool. You didn't really talk about ghost hunting. It was, you just didn't talk about it. And, but my grandparents, I do remember them talking about a lot of Indian in the area. We had a lot of roads and things that were named, had a lot of Indian names to things, a lot of motifs. So I know it was a heavy Indian area. So that possibly could be a factor.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you kind of wonder about is, you know, especially when you're in such a remote area, it's like, why would there be the sounds of people in this place? If this was the first kind of thing thing that was built on that piece of land. But then you got to think, well, what about further back? Way further back, you know, who's been there? Why were they there? What was going on? And
absolutely,
you know, there's just so many possibilities. So you had that experience as a child of the strange sounds and the ghostly experience, but kind of cemented it as, well, these things happen. It not so much, you know, are you crazy, but it's a fact of life. How did things progress then for you, you know, throughout the rest of childhood? Did you have any other experiences or was it, you know, relatively calm?
Throughout my childhood at my regular home in the bottom right corner of the map, the southeast part of Michigan, things were very calm in our regular house. I had maybe a few visions of possibly some ghosts, you know, things that you're not quite sure when you're a kid how to process that in your mind. It really wasn't until I started becoming a teenager, and that's when my curiosity, as soon as I could really kind of start driving, I had another friend that had a similar interest, so we started going around to like cemeteries, doing like the teenager thing, and just exploring. And we didn't have much equipment or anything. Sometimes we might take a camcorder, like the old big VHS size shoulder cameras or something. but for the most part, it was all just going out and trying to experience and research things. And yes, the occasional Ouija board. I know we talk about that's like a bad thing, but you know, when you're a teenager, these are things that you just have fun and explore with sometimes.
Sure. So did you have any experience? Tell me about the experiences you're talking about where you said, you know, you may have kind of seen or heard some things. And do you believe when you had those experiences, it's because it was that evident and these things were going on? Or do you consider yourself to be somewhat sensitive and able to pick up on things that others are not? Kind of a two-part question.
Okay. Absolutely. I think the best thing would be to tell you about my first major ghost experience.
All right.
And what I mean by that is my first ever seeing a full body apparition.
Okay.
I've only seen an actual ghost a few times in my entire life, and that's including up to right now. Actually seeing a ghost. A lot of people think maybe if you're in this industry, if you're doing a lot of investigations, you probably see a lot of ghosts, but that's not true. Honestly, I've only seen a few, like one full actual full body apparition and then a few partial. So I'm going to tell you about the full body. And that was when I was 15. I was doing this thing where I was going around on the summer and staying like a week with different cousins. And so I decided I was staying with a cousin in Ohio around the Columbus area, a very old part of town. And I was staying the night there again, and I was laying on the couch, and it was, I'm not sure the exact time, but I do know that there was light coming in from the street into the living room. I hadn't quite fallen asleep. I was having trouble sleeping. It was real late. Like I said, probably at least around midnight or so, maybe a little after. And I saw a woman come out of my cousin's room because I could see down the hallway. And the spirit came out and started walking toward me. But she looked like a semi-transparent a black woman with older period clothing. And she walked up to me. Literally, I can't remember if she actually walked or glided. I can't remember, but I was very transfixed on her. And she walked up to me, and she smiled at me, looked down at me, kind of cocked her head, and she just raised her finger to her lips as if to just say, you know, shush, it's okay. And then it was almost like she tucked me in for bed and then turned around and went back across the living room, down the hallway, and then made a left into my cousin's room. And I'm like kind of freaked out. I mean, I'm like 50 years old.
Yeah.
I'm like, who is this person? But I was just kind of, again, like I said earlier, I was transfixed. I just didn't move. I didn't talk. I was just engrossed by her. And it was, I didn't know what to do. And so the next day, my cousin, you know, I talked to my cousin. I said, oh my God, I said, look, I've got to tell you this. And so I told her the story, and she said, "Oh yeah, that's Betty." She said, "I talk to her a lot. She comes out of my closet." And well, come to find out, we did some more research, and her closet used to be stairs to an upstairs. Like, it used to be the stairs that went up to like an upstairs loft area, and then they converted it to an attic or whatever. And so the stairs are no longer blocked off. It's a closet for her. And I guess come to find out, she was murdered by a gentleman. She was actually having an affair with him, and he ended up murdering her to cover his tracks. So there was a true story behind this, and it kind of freaked me out. But that's also where the second real main thing that ever happened to me to truly want me to start getting into paranormal.
Yeah. That would be terrifying. It almost sounds like at the beginning, I'm thinking the library ghost in Ghostbusters, where it comes over, whispers, "Shh." I was waiting for you to be like, and I went into the covers, and then I popped out and said, "Get her!" You know?
Like, I probably, if she was standing there, if she ever just like turned into a skeleton, like the scary.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, I would have lost it.
Because that's what's got that when I'm visualizing this, that's the ghost that I'm seeing with the shh.
Right.
And it just kind of moving along, doing its thing, you know, because that's, wow. So you have this experience. How did you process this? You know, you get out of this experience, the next day you're having your Wheaties. I mean, what are you thinking? Are you thinking, was that a dream? Did anybody else see this? Did you talk about it? How are you going about that?
Well, I when I first woke up, I was just like, oh my God. So after it was done, I didn't just go right to sleep. I was up for quite a while. That's how I know it wasn't a dream. It wasn't one of those where she disappeared into my cousin's room, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm like, oh, the morning happens. I was up for a while. I even sat up, and I was just, it took a while. And then I finally got tired, went to bed, but there was a lot of excitement, a lot of questions going through my mind. I was just like, what did I see? I mean, who was that? I knew it was a ghost. Like, I knew it was a ghost. She wasn't like a solid figure that I could tell, you know, that was not a ghost, but I knew she was a ghost.
Yeah.
But in time, I'm just like, I was trying to comprehend, like, why did I see this? You know? And I'm like, there's no way I'm dreaming. And so when I finally got to sleep and I woke up, my cousin, she slept in till like 1 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever that day. So it was like, I was like waiting, like, God, can I wake up? And then when she finally woke up, that's when I was just like, hey, I got to tell you. And so then again, we spent the rest of the week asking questions, finding out, doing some research, just because I wanted to know, I wanted some answers. Like, was this a real, and she said that she had talked to her quite often and that they would have conversations. So it really validated what I saw.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that would just be such an experience to have, and others having it as well, you said. And kind of comparing notes on something like that. So you have these experiences, you know, throughout your childhood, you know, in different stages and places. How did that continue to progress for you further in life? I mean, how did you end up translating that into other things?
Well, and to go back to part of your question too, real quick,
yeah,
is that I don't have a lot of sensitivities. Nowadays, I do feel like I have more intuition and sense, and I can sense a lot more things over the years. But I'm not like a full blown like psychic or clairvoyant or anything like that. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, through the after that, I had spent another probably 3 or 4 years of my teenage years. Again, started really kind of getting into the Ouija board stuff. I do talk about a few of these things in my book, but we did get into some more spirit communication, and then I kind of got away from some things for a little bit. Again, a few times in my life, I started kind of backing out. I felt like, oh, maybe I'm just getting too deep. I don't want to go down any bad paths or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I had kind of gotten away from it, for a little bit there. And then, and just, it would be like off and on things where maybe I'd have a few little minor experiences. I'd hear some noises or something might move in the home I was living in, just little things like that where I would detect things. And of course I would do a lot of reading and studying some things over some time. And when I really wanted to get back into it full time was the early 2000s. This is when I decided I had met my wife, who I'm married to now, and we had been together for a while. And then all of a sudden, through just playing some scary games on the PlayStation, she started making me play some scary games and to watch me jump. Because believe it or not, you know, it's the fake stuff that actually scares me. The real stuff doesn't scare me.
Sure.
So, but anyways, she through conversation of scary games, I found out that we had a common interest and that she had been involved in paranormal. So thus the new quest of, we started a team. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some of the Ouija board experiences you had and where you kind of felt a little bit like maybe I'm going in too deep and it kind of made you pull back. What were some of those things that kind of put the brakes on it?
Well, I think there was a few incidences where, for me, it was like leaving the Ouija board, sitting there with the planchette, and I always had purposely left it right in the middle of the board, and I'd wake up the next day and the planchette would be in different positions, those type of things. And I really felt like that, in combination with some of the texts I was reading at the time, mm-hmm. Really reading up on some demonology, and when you just read about that stuff, it gets pretty intense, because we're talking about some real heavy subjects, especially demonology. So when you're reading that stuff as a young man, and you're having these Ouija board incidences where the planchette's moving on you, and you know that there's nobody else around, it's in your own type environment, It can start getting scary.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit more about, you know, I mean, just how scary did it get for you? Were you feeling like you were kind of starting to communicate with something that wasn't, you know, something you wanted to communicate with? Certainly the stuff moving around by itself would be frightening in its own accord. But was there anything where you're kind of getting vibes or kind of getting feelings that, you know, maybe I'm digging somewhere I shouldn't be digging?
Well, and yeah, and you're doing some good investigative journalism right now, because you are digging up something that, okay, so here's the incident that really kind of got me to stop for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I had my friend called me up. In fact, I think he paged me. This is back when pagers became a thing. And he paged me and said, hey, you know, I want to meet with you over at this particular cemetery. It was actually nearby my home that I grew up in. And it was an old Catholic cemetery, very old, a lot of old tombstones. So it had that nice creepy vibe. So we met up and he was like, listen, you know, he's like, I did some more research. I want to try this thing. And what he wanted to attempt was a state of mind, a trance, that he wanted to do these chants and these words. He had really gotten into, I don't know what my friend was getting into as well. He was off doing a lot of his own research, and I think he was taking more of that witchcraft, mm-hmm. Magic path. Mm-hmm. So we had sat there in cross-legged across from each other, and he had I guess lit some candles. It wasn't even windy out. It was just dead quiet.
Yeah.
And then he was chanting these words. And next thing you know, like literally it felt like we left our body. It was almost like we were in this dream state, and you could literally see a bunch of dead spirits around us.
Like simultaneously, you all were experiencing this at the same time.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what I was going to tell you. I'll get to that part in a second.
Okay.
But absolutely, this was something that he was there, I was there, and you could see our bodies. We were literally almost like astral projection. We were outside of our bodies, and we could visually see dead spirits in this graveyard. And then, and this all happened very quickly, so it's not like we weren't in this state for very long. And all of a sudden, in the sky, and I know this is going to sound crazy to some people, but this is why, again, this is why I left for a while. But in the sky, I saw almost what was like a chariot. That's the best way I can describe it. And there was this creature on this chariot. I couldn't exactly get a good focus on it, but it went across the sky. And almost as if it brought the daylight with it. And the spirits looked up to the sky, and then they all went back down into the earth. And then we woke up. So it was really weird. And then I asked my friend, I'm like, so what did you see? And he described the same thing to me. And I said, yes. And we had confirmed each other on that. And, but it was, it really left an impression with me. I couldn't shake those visions out of my head. And I just backed away. I just like I stopped kind of hanging out with them, and it really started that thing. And eventually, like really shortly after that, is when I ended up just joining the military and getting away. And that's really when I kind of turned away from it for a while. It was pretty terrifying.
What was your friend chanting? I mean, did you ever get to have that conversation?
No, I never really pressed on it. And even looking back on it, I'm sure I haven't talked to too many people about it. I just haven't. I've kind of left that one alone.
Yeah.
But I've got some friends that are involved in some similar things nowadays that I'll probably find out what and analyze that more. I just never really got back into look back at analyzing that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a terrifying experience in what you were seeing and experiencing, you know, simultaneously. That, I mean, that in itself, yeah, I mean, you could definitely say, you know, you were, you know, kind of on the precipice of kind of getting into something dark. And I wouldn't blame you for kind of, you know, not only visually being scared, but I would imagine that there was some emotional component to it as well that had a certain feeling.
Oh, absolutely. And when you see those things, they really stick with you. And again, you feel like that feeling when you feel small and that there's this much bigger expanse, mm-hmm. just makes you feel small. And you just feel like you're way out of your element at that point. It's like, wow, what am I getting into?
Yeah.
It's just crazy. So again, that's when I kind of had to take some time to get back into and focus back into real life.
And obviously you did that. And then you had said, you know, later you had met someone that also had a similar interest and kind of playing the spooky video games also kind of sparked that interest again. But after having something like that, I mean, that would be a traumatic experience. Beyond, you know, you have an interest there and it's, you know, you kind of enjoy that to a certain extent. You've had experiences throughout your life. What made you say, yeah, let's dig back into this? I mean, especially after that experience, I think that'll be a kind of a hard one almost to kind of come back out of, no matter what stage in life, to say, yeah, let me dip my toe back into that pool. But when you're trying to impress a girl, you
know. Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's always going to be part of it, too. It's like, oh, you have a similar interest. I have a similar interest. Hey, that's just going to further my case.
Sure.
So, yeah, absolutely. And but at the same time, I think what it was, too, is that incident, I've always kind of put that, I've always rationalized that in my mind as, was that an actual event? Was it a trance, like a hypnotic type thing? Did he kind of do hypnosis to me? You know, was this manufactured? Were there drugs involved somehow? Again, I've always kind of boxed that up and said, you know, that's sort of, I never considered that real.
Was there anything involved? I mean, did your friend give you anything that, I mean, not like that you were aware of? I mean, or just you know, were there drugs involved?
Right. Well, no. And at the time, I mean, we weren't doing any drugs, believe it or not. That was one of the things about him is that he was never into drugs. Sure. So that was a good thing that I could hang out with him and yeah. we didn't have that influence on me.
I don't know. My thought would have been like, did one of your friends slip something in your drink as they were all, you know?
right. I got roofied.
Almost. You know?
Right. Well, and again, I don't know for 100%. So that's why I've always boxed that away as not a real experience, so to speak. Well,
But has it been easier to box it away as not a real experience because it was so terrifying? I mean, honestly, when you take a look at it from a different perspective all these years later, were you boxing it away as not a real experience just because it's a very difficult one to process and it's easier to say, nah, it was a dream or something, versus going, no, I think that something actually happened, just for ease of, you know, your mind?
Well, it's hard saying. I would say that from what I've learned over the years of investigating and all the experiences I've had since investigating versus that, when it's kind of like an anomaly. So mm-hmm. This is what you typically experience in general. And then there's that.
Yeah.
So, and that was very extreme. So I look at that as, again, maybe not reality compared to what I normally have experienced over the years, things like that. So that's why I've always kind of kept it up shelf somewhere.
It's almost like it's a different thing that was going on though too at the time. I mean, when you're out investigating, you're seeking out the paranormal, you're trying to document things. In that experience that you were having, you know, when you were younger, your friend with what they were doing and chanting and things like that, they were almost kind of trying to be part of the paranormal and part of that circle. And that's a very different perspective when you're, you know, in the circle of something, or when you're, you know, trying to, you know, view it from the outside in. And investigating is, I think, a lot of that. But when you're, you know, actively participating, or your friends are actively participating in some sort of a cult type thing, that I think it totally changed the perspective, in which would then give you, you know, a very different experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Josh. In part two, what was Josh's goal when he started investigating the dead as an adult? What kinds of experiences has Josh had that completely confirmed to him that spirits are real? Is there any risk using communication devices in your home? Those questions and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. Sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. You'll get access to part two of this interview and all of our interviews, hundreds of them that you can binge away on right now. Patreon or go to thegravetalks.com. Search for The Grave Talks at Patreon. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.